That was Party Down. George Duke passed away on Monday, 67 years old. An incredible musician. We're going to be playing him for the next rest of the show because we're going to remember George Duke, Party Down. I could put his all CDs in my car and just go listen. Anyway, even Michael Leska remembers George Duke.
Great, great musician.
Michael Leska, how are you? Welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. It's been a while.
Thank you. It's good to see you, pal.
Good to see you too, man. So Michael Leska, of course, former Baltimore Sun columnist, author of The Colts Baltimore City and Its Love Affair with the in the 1950s and many more books that he's written, was a dear friend of Art Donovan's.
Great, great guy.
Who passed away. He was the personification of Baltimore and the Baltimore Colts from 1950 to 1962 when he left the field, right?
Well, even more than that. This is a guy who, as Mike Klingemann wrote in The Sun the other day, played 12 years and spent the rest of his life talking about it. as great as he was on the football field, and he was terrific, you know, a Hall of Famer, he was even better off the football field because he included everybody. His stories brought the team to life, made out of Baltimore a community that wasn't there before. You know, when the Colts first came to Baltimore, we had no big league teams. We were a collection of disparate neighborhoods. The Colts and the Orioles were real binding forces. The Colts arrived in 53, the Orioles in 54. They brought us together. For the first time, we had a common denominator of something to root for. And Artie was really the personification of that. He's a guy who grew up in a real melting pot neighborhood in the Bronx and came down to Baltimore and translated that to Baltimore. He played – the difference between the Orioles and the Colts, though, and this I think was crucial. The Orioles, throughout the 1950s, had 3, 4, 5 maybe tops black players. The Colts had Lenny Moore, had Big Daddy Lipscomb, had Jim Parker, had Leonard Lyles, had Johnny Sample, high-profile guys. And nobody made speeches about it, but it was there for the first time in the history of Baltimore.
Which was then still a segregated city.
Segregated city, and simultaneously the Brown decision had come down to, from the Supreme Court, integrating the public schools. Everybody was wondering, can we make it work? Can we make it work for the first time in Baltimore's history? And here were these rough, tough guys out on the football field, nobody making speeches about it, but we were watching as, you know, Unitas drops back into the pocket, protected by Jim Parker, throwing to Lenny Moore. Artie Donovan is making a tackle assisted by Big Daddy Lipscomb. Here were these guys right. who for the first time, and we're cheering for black and white guys together for the first time in the city's history. That meant a lot. And Artie was really, in many ways, the personification of that. He told us the stories, not only about football, about who these guys were, about the fun they were having together. He included all of us.
You know, it's interesting. In that era, too, when you think about it, I mean, Lenny Moore still lives in Baltimore.
Yeah.
He's still here. I'm glad he's still with us.
Yeah. A great man.
Great human being. And Art Donovan stayed here.
Yep. Jim Parker stayed here.
Opened a business at the Liberty Heights in Garrison.
And you know what? Artie Donovan helped Parker get in the liquor business. And Parker was the first guy to talk about it. And Artie used to go to – well, you remember, we used to hang out at Liberty Heights and Garrison, and that's where Parker had his liquor store for many years. And Artie would come in, and there was a kid in the store one day who said to Parker, "Hey, some white guy came in here just now and stole a six-pack." And Artie Donovan said, "Yeah, I never did pay you back for that, did I?" So they hung out together. This was a lesson for Baltimore. Nobody made speeches about it, but we watched. We saw.
You know, and one of the things that I regret we can't have his voice in the air today. We could have pulled some other clips, but we've had interviews with him on the air, but all of our archives are now at UMBC being digitized for forever so everybody can use them. So we couldn't pull our old clips in our Artie Donovan conversations. But he was just so funny with that thick Brooklyn accent. But he was still Baltimore, even despite that thick Brooklyn accent.
Bronx, excuse me. He said, you know, Baltimore was a lot like New York, except that the housing patterns were different, but it was the great ethnic mix. And that's what he loved. He loved that ethnic mix. And it wasn't easy. You know, these guys were trying to figure things out just as the rest of us were. But he loved he loved that ethnic mix. And that translated to the rest of us.
I think you're actually calling me by mistake.
That was my wife calling. Maybe. I should have shut the phone off. I told her I was going to be on the show today. She's calling to find out when.
You can download on iTunes later. but just talk about Art Donovan from the man and how you two became so close. I mean, what he meant to you as a human being.
Well, he...
I'll have to teach you how to turn that off.
Well, I'm from the Bronx originally, too. So we had that in common. I moved down here when I was 4 years old, but he liked the fact that we had both come from the same kind of neighborhoods originally. And we would talk about the Bronx, but we would also talk about, you know, what life was like off the field. This is a guy who went off to Notre Dame, did a year at Notre Dame after, you know, being a high school star in the Bronx, and then quit to join the Marines in World War II. Saw a lot of very, very tough action in the South Pacific, was on a ship that was hit by kamikaze pilots. You know, but he joked about it. He never talked about how rough the war was. He would turn it into a joke. And I remember him saying one time, you know, I'm crouched down on this ship and these guys are shooting at me. And I'm saying, what are they doing? I'm a nice guy. I said, why didn't you tell them that? And he said, I couldn't get close enough. He turned everything into a joke, but you knew that there was a great amount of pain behind that. Came out of the Marines after the war, you know, went home to the Bronx and, you know, showed up surprising his mother, you know, said, Mom, home, I won the war, you know, as if he had done it himself. And then, you know, decided to come down to Baltimore to give pro football a try, which was not a big deal back then. It was just the, you know, baseball was the national sport back then. But his generation put Baltimore on the map and also, of course, put pro football on the map because Artie was part of that team that won that 58 game, that famous game in New York called the greatest game ever played.
Right.
That really established football as the national sport.
And these guys played the game when they were actually lived in people's neighborhoods. They were,
yes, absolutely,
like working class guys, had middle class salaries, working class salaries, lived, yeah, with everybody else, and were not just touchable, they were actually your next door neighbor.
Lenny Moore moved on to Yosemite Avenue in Northwest Baltimore. My friend Bob Miller, who we both went to City College with, talked about how Lenny would come out and throw a football around with the neighborhood guys. And Bob Miller said, I'm catching a pass from Lenny Moore. I guess that means I could play pro football. You know, he's 12 years old at the time. But I don't know that kids can have that experience today because the players make so much money.
Right.
Artie Donovan, a Hall of Famer. The most he ever made in the season was $22,000. They all had off-season jobs. Artie had, you know, was selling liquor. Jim Parker was selling cemetery plots until Artie got him a liquor distributorship, and then he had the liquor store. Unitas worked at Sparrows Point one winter. Gino Marchetti was setting pins at his cousin's bowling alley. They didn't make that kind of money that they make today, and so you're right. They lived with the fans. I remember a conversation one time with Mike Curtis, the ferocious linebacker,
right,
who
right.
said after games, he would go down to East Baltimore, to Highlandtown, to Middle River, and to South Baltimore, and to neighborhood bars and hang out with fans after the game. He said we were connected at our hearts.
Right.
At our souls with these fans. We understood them because we were working class guys like they were.
I remember those days really well. My mom was really close then to Lenny Moore. She was close to Big Daddy Lipscomb. And I just remember him coming to visit my mother in the house, and he was this huge guy. He would pick me up in the air. I was just a little kid. You know, it was just like They were just regular folks who would come say hello.
Absolutely. And you and I went to Garrison Junior High with Claude Young, Buddy Young's son, who we called Henny, because it was close to Henny Youngman. And these guys were all part of our communities. They went to our schools. They hung out in our neighborhoods. And the guys like Artie and Lenny were part of that. And that meant the beginning of a love affair. It wasn't just watching them at the ballpark on Sundays. It was also having them in our neighborhoods. And Don Kellett, who was then a general manager of the Colts, was sending these guys out to churches and synagogues and all kinds of community gatherings all the time to make these players part of the community. And that meant the world to us.
No, it did. It was a very different time. It was a very different place. I think about people like Art Donovan, the books you've written, and how you keep that sense alive. You know, I mean, for the younger generations, people coming after us, about who men like Art Donovan and Lenny Moore were and what they did and, you know, I mean, what they stood for.
And what Lenny is still doing. I mean, Lenny for years has been working with troubled youngsters. And
still.
Yeah, I mean, a remarkable guy. And, you know, that comes from being part of a community.
Michael Lesker, I'm really happy you finally got here. I mean, I know there's all this kind of madness at what time you're supposed to be here, but I'm glad you're here.
I am too.
I'm really glad you're here.
Thank you.
And I look forward to your new book coming out this fall.
I hope you'll have me back on to talk about it.
Can't wait. This is about the 1950s, right?
It's keyed to the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination and the social upheaval that erupted in the 60s but was simmering right below the surface in the 50s. And so many of the key players were right here in Baltimore.
I look forward to that, brother. See you soon.
Thank you,
pal. Thanks for coming here. Michael Lesker has been our guest here in the studio, longtime Baltimore Sun columnist. We're going to go out for a minute with I Am For Real, May the Funk Be With You by George Duke. We're going to come right back in our continuing conversations and reflections on Trayvon Martin and what his death means for America and what it's saying to us all. Stay with us. We'll be right back.